your lover. To the tick tock, you don't stop. To the tick tick, and you don't quit. Hit it.
Yeah, Save On Radio. Good morning. This is Flip Out, and this is the morning show. I guess that's what it's called, but it's also called The Revolutions Will Not Be Televised. Playing all vinyl, all 45s mostly, but today I'm going to break protocol because I have a special guest with me today. It's Kenny Mack Truck, all the way from Granville Island.
G'day.
Today we're going to talk about the Red Bull 3 style. It's been around for a long time now.
I guess so, yeah.
Ever since you started it.
Well, no, we all started it. You guys are the DJs. I'm just the guy in the background.
Well, you thought of it. You thought of something.
Sort of.
You thought of something different.
You guys thought of it. I just...
No, you actually thought of it, sort of. And then you asked people to participate.
No, yeah. Well, it started as a little thing, actually, by a friend of mine, Scott Jewett, did a pre-3-style, I guess.
Okay, before we get into it, this is the official rundown here. So this is whatever you've ever wanted to know about 3-style. You can even ask some questions. We'll go
have a computer, maybe, so we can answer questions. I'll put my computer on as well, so I can't type and...
No.
Have said thing. So I'll grab my computer.
Okay.
And you can answer that one, and I can answer this one.
Sure. You can't answer the IG story.
No, that'd be very hard.
That's difficult. Sorry, IG story. We can just look, come back. Anyway, this will be your official rundown. Have you done interviews like this before?
I don't know. I don't know what you're doing yet. So I'll tell you in 2 hours.
Well, that's how it's going to go down.
Let's do this. Live. Real live.
This is real live, and it'll be rebroadcast, so this is great information.
Sure.
Rebel 3 Style. So first of all, maybe let people know. Yeah, I guess you're going to...
Really, the real first...
Who are you, though? Like, where did you come from?
The Earth.
Why do you care about...
I came from Sudbury, Ontario, And I guess I spent a lot of time in live music venues way back when.
Right.
Seeing bands like, I don't know, Sloan and, back then, it was the early 90s in Ontario, so there was kind of this Canadian indie rock scene that was wild, like bands like Bourbon Tabernacle Choir and the Morgan Fields and the small bar called the Townhouse in Sudbury. And then I was playing basketball in university, finished that, moved to Whistler, and saw guys like Check and Scotty, Vinyl Richie, aka Spin Cat.
What's aka?
Spin Cat.
Oh my gosh, Spin Cat.
Spun K,
Spin Cat.
Wicked Lester, come on.
Oh yeah.
Man of many names and
legend.
Different tax accounts.
Oh man.
Hey.
So you moved to Whistler and then.
Actually, I think I saw. Oh, I did see Check and Kenny Glasgow at a rave in like 91 or 2 on King Street in Toronto.
Wow.
That was kind of the first real DJing I saw, late night, those guys doing their thing, and I was like, whoa, this is fun. Then moved to Whistler, and there's venues like Tommy Africa's back then, and Garfinkel's was where Max Fish was. Actually, Johnny Wishbone played on tape players there.
Wow.
That was cassette deck DJing. How's that?
That's
awesome. A long time ago, but Check and Scotty were basically playing mashup styles before it was a term.
Yeah, with records.
With records.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, cutting records to make blends and so on and doing it live. And Whistler was a bit of a scene back then. It opened my eyes to a whole new thing.
Wow. And that's amazing because even Whistler's grown to like where you probably didn't imagine that it would get to. Hosting the Olympics and everything.
Yeah, there was no IGA there when I moved there.
Facts.
For real. There was no North Village. It was just I think it was a dump maybe at the time. And it was...
Some would say it's still a dump. Old days.
Just kidding. Whatever, man. It was $800 to stay there in a hotel. No dump in the world.
Yo,
like that.
Think about that. $800.
One night? Crazy place. I'm opening the Facebooks on here so we can chat with people potentially.
Okay, I might not be fast forwarding, but who knows? So you and Whistler, and then does getting a job at Red Bull count? Is there a story to that?
I guess so. Yeah, I was working in the action sports world with Spy Optic, and we threw a lot of parties. Sure, we had a lot of athletes and did a lot of things, but we threw a lot of parties as well. And obviously, can't have a good party without good music. Right. A lot of the guys. From around Vancouver, DJs would play these parties, and we had a nightly or weekly at Sonar, back in the day. Shout out Mike Thompson.
Hey.
Friday nights. I actually bartended upstairs, and I think Scott was DJing downstairs, and guys like Dana D were DJing upstairs in the small room. Wow. I think you were there a few times. Heads was on the bill a lot. Headspin,
yeah. Yeah.
Check. Kate Modee.
Oh, yeah.
On the mic.
Lady Precise.
This is pre-Big Sexy Funk at Shine days.
Yeah.
Wow. Then Red Bull came to Canada in 2004. And I got a call from them because I'd done some stuff with them here and there. We used to go to Seattle and take pallets of Red Bull back up to Whistler.
Oh, damn. That's facts, actually, that I didn't know that Red Bull wasn't in Canada until 2004. Like, they didn't have a team here or couldn't even buy it?
Couldn't even buy it, yeah.
Because I remember people used to go to Asia and come back with those glass bottles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, there was a crazy story. There was guys, like, bootlegging that product in Canada. And they used to sell it at Sonar way back in the day.
Oh, man.
And those dudes, I think they got busted once by customs, and then they basically made a placebo version of it with nothing in it.
Wow.
And brought it in way back when. This is a long time ago. This stuff used to sell for like $100 out of the trunk of a car.
Wow.
The little glass bottle joints, the Kratendine, I think it was called. Kratendang.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Crazy.
That is
facts.
Hilarious. Facts. Strange.
$100 for 50 bottles, I think it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh man. So you're there. So Red Bull comes, and are you like the first hire nation?
No. I was I don't know, in the first couple dozen anyway. Yeah, there was a team in Toronto, and Jameson Keegan, who I'd met a few years ago, a few decades ago now. He was working in the Caribbean, moving to Canada, and I guess put my name forward, and I don't know. The rest is
history.
Kind of history, yeah. So you're working for Red Bull, and then have a background of
music and parties and sports, and there we go. Hey,
what's background up? In parties is a pretty cool thing to have. I have a background in parties.
I think it's critical,
but not just going to parties.
You know, both sides, yeah.
Both sides.
Shout out Nina Las Vegas.
Word up.
When we were there, not 2 weeks ago, talking about one of the most important things about DJing is going to parties.
It's true.
Straight up.
Yeah, that's true. And you hear a lot of talk about bedroom DJs. There's a whole term called bedroom DJs, and I'd say Threestyle actually gives those people a chance to break out of their shell. But if you want to stay in the bedroom, I guess you can.
For real?
Yeah, that's
but
fine.
If you come out of the shell, then be prepared to be
on stage,
Yeah. Yeah, on stage. And if things and if that's not comfortable for you, then I guess that platform's not for you.
Oh,
so don't talk shit about it.
Okay, so we're back to, yeah, early days. So, 07. G-Man and Risk had a night going called Mash It Up Fridays.
Yeah,
at Atlantis.
At Atlantis.
What was Atlantis before Atlantis? Mars?
Mars.
Used to go to Drum and Bass Tuesdays there.
Before Atlantis, it was called something else, too. But we forget.
Mars.
Okay.
No, before Mars. Oh, yeah.
It was called...
I can't remember.
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Anyway. So this is the timeline now. Okay, so we're talking to Kenny Mack. I'm calling you the founder of the Red Bull Threestyle. And we're taking it back to the very first one ever. Save On Radio. We're here on Hastings Street live.
Yeah, Friday night, 2007, October maybe.
That was my residency, Mash It Up Fridays.
That's right.
They asked me to be on. And this is right. There's a few important things that are happening in the world at that time.
Tell us.
Serato.
Early days.
Yeah, Serato, when it first came out, maybe the first year.
Scratch Live.
Yeah.
I think it was called.
Scratch Live, Serato, Rain.
Everyone assumed Rain, don't it?
Yeah, everyone really did.
Yep.
Before that, there was like...
shout out to AJ.
Vinyl Scratch or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's a couple of other like digital kind of controller things.
DVS.
DVS, that's what they were. Yeah. Digital vinyl system, is that what it's called?
Hey.
So Serato is like coming to the forefront. Everyone's kind of using it. People are
just starting to use it. Not everybody. I think, like, you know, Scott was still calling it a cheater box, and Matt the Alien was just coming over, and you know, a lot of people were kind of like on the fence about, is this thing cool, and or is it cheating or whatever. Right. And it was dope. Like, you could bring a lot of crates to the club.
So how did Serato was a big part of why you guys thought of doing this thing, right?
I think it was coincidental more than anything else. Technology was moving. That whole ADD style of DJing was starting to happen.
Right.
you know, Diplo had the holler board at the time, and people were doing these like crazy fast edits of songs. Right. And B-More was a thing, and
you could play anything because it's on your computer.
Go, yeah.
And, well, you could do that with CDJs, but now like
yeah, it still wasn't really a thing. You still had to bring a bunch of CDs at the time. Like, you couldn't use thumb drives.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, people were just jumping around styles, and you know, there's like B-More edits of.
Jefferson's
everything and people were doing that kind of stuff, so yeah, it was pretty hype time. And we had this idea to do this kind of multi-genre thing where, you know, always fascinated by DMCs and ITFs, but not so much in a venue.
Right.
In a soft seater I'm all about it. In right. a venue on a Friday night, I don't want to bring my girl and her friends or my friends that don't really know what's up with cutting and scratching and so on to a right. venue on a Friday night to see that. I just don't.
Right. And so. It was kind of, it's arguable that that turntablism kind of hit a peak, and then it started kind of like getting more marginalized because the crowd.
Well, a lot of things were happening too, right? Like more and more people were DJing. DJing was becoming a not just an underground thing. Like everybody had a DJ. A restaurant, everything a DJ. So DJ right. music was more, was becoming more of a mainstream culture thing too.
Yeah.
So I think it became more acceptable as to hire a DJ as your entertainment. Where I came from the band side of things, where you book a band and pay $12 to see 45 minutes.
and the DMC DJs, like they were kind of not struggling, but they were trying to find their way into the club world, whereas they couldn't get. I remember specifically, like, I think, you know, Craze started playing drum and bass, just started playing drum and bass sets and stuff. And
yeah, he went to Germany and was like, oh, crowds want to hang out to drum and bass more than they want to hang out to me doing everything that he did at the time.
Yeah.
And it became more of a vibe.
Yeah, so it's kind of, this is kind of an interesting point when people make the comparison to DMCs and three style, is that when the DMCs were around, the people
still
that
are.
When it was like at its height,
yeah.
those DJs really, they kind of wanted to, they had a hard time breaking into just touring and playing, like just a set.
Yeah, well, I'd say a DMC routine as a performance.
Yeah, 100%.
7 minutes of dead precision accuracy and sweating that accuracy to the nth. And I don't know if you want to feel that on a Friday night
right.
when you see in a DJ. You want to see looseness. You want to see a little right. bit, you want to see the liveness, the fun things that should happen. How do you get out of that?
Right.
How do you read and react to the crowd? And not saying the three style does all that, but there's elements that do for sure. And that yep. was right from the jump. Well, you were in the first one. So
I was in the first one at that night. Yeah.
Yeah. And, there were 8 people the first night.
I think so.
8 of you.
Yeah. The reason that it really appealed to me was because it was presented to me as like, do some mashups, like play, like, it was literally play at least 3 genres of music and just like do all types of different stuff. Just be as creative as you can. So I was like, I was just doing mashups, like putting Beyonce on Aerosmith. I had Cue Points on Serato.
Did you play that Neptune's joint?
I don't know.
I think you did, yeah.
I did like, I put like Promiscuous Girl beat on something else. What the hell is that one?
Oh, what the hell was that song? Yeah, anyway, I gotta remember.
But I was really into it because I'm like, I never entered the DMC because that really wasn't my wheelhouse, because I was always DJing like in clubs and stuff. I would practice and I imagined myself, hey, man, I should go in the DMCs, like it would be kind of amazing, but I never practiced on that level. And then when the three style came out, I'm like, oh, so I don't have to make up a friggin' like super technical routine. I can just do this party rocking thing and put those elements in there. And it kind of appealed to me like that. And I think even to this day, it kind of appeals to a lot of them. Then with that being said, on the flip side, got people like Headspin who are DMC friggin' built, but also are so well-rounded that it's like just a natural fit as well. So you can come in from both ends.
Yeah, well, that was the intention, right, from the first one. And DMCs were 7 minutes, I do believe.
Yep.
Yeah. And in this, you need a little bit more time to breathe, so we went with 15.
Right.
Because still to this day, records have to do a lot of the work. If a song's dope, it doesn't need that much manipulation. The timing of the drop and letting it air for a certain amount of time is requisite for the record to actually do the work it's supposed to do.
Right.
So we made it a little bit longer. And yeah, that night was, it was kind of magical. It was fun, man. It was a different thing. It gave an outlet to creativity, which I think that's what any, I don't know, brand or marketing should do. It should just enable creativity on a bigger stage.
And the rules were exactly the same. Like the ground rules.
The basic rules were the exact same. When at the end of the night, it was, I remember standing with Rob and Rob Risk and G-Man and being like, that was really fun. And all the DJs were like, yeah, that was really fun. It was dope. Like, I get to do stuff I don't normally get to do. And that was kind of the intention. I remember saying it to those guys. I'm like, this could kind of work anywhere.
Wow. So yeah. who was your homie that you cited as the
Scott. Yeah, so Scott Jewett, a guy I worked with at Red Bull, kind of did one in Kelowna. As it was called Threestyle. It was kind of open format, but it didn't really come from the music side of things. And Red Bull does a lot of things around the world. So did this one-off thing in Kelowna, and that's what kind of inspired the actuality of bringing it all together and having a format, because having a little bit more experience in that side of things and you know, the DMC hit, and being close to the DMC is just from watching it. I judged a couple, actually, when they had the Whistler qualifiers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Which I found awesome and fascinating, just not really in a club.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess you've kind of said this over the years, like, it's about party, because it was like, who's the best party rocker?
Yeah,
and then LMFAO went and fucked that up.
Yeah, yeah, they stole that shit. Party rock is still fun, for real. But those guys made a lot of money with that.
I'm going to run down the winners, and we can just talk about it. So the first one ever was the one at Mash It Up Fridays.
Yeah.
So Matt the Alien actually won.
And he showed up like late.
And he was using that Pioneer mixer with the
909.
Yeah, with the thing in the middle.
With the foot pedal.
Oh, with the foot pedal.
Yeah,
is that what he was doing?
Yeah, yeah, the foot pedal.
He was doing, so this is kind of interesting, because every champion, like any year up to like last week, has brought something new. And it's kind of usually with technology driven.
Yeah.
Kind of, right? So there it is, the first one ever, Matt the Alien uses a foot friggin' pedal to do the roll. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he kept going,
all the effects, yeah.
And he was doing all this filter and all this other shit. So he won. I got second.
You did?
Yes. Yeah. And I think Friction got third.
I think you're correct.
I think so. Yeah. But that's here nor there. So Matt the Alien wins the first one. So then the next year, you do... So that's just one, and then...
One. Boom. It was late in the year, so we were writing our plans for the next year, and we kind of did... Six, I do believe, in Western Canada, across right. Western Canada, and there was no real like ladder up or anything. It was so just kind of like local events, like we did the year before. But
right,
we did,
so you did Vancouver.
We did Vancouver. We did Edmonton. We did Calgary, Saskatoon, Winnipeg. Oh, and we did Victoria.
Oh, dope!
And Keys and Crates actually headlined that one.
Keys and Crates headlined.
2008 in Victoria.
They were together then?
They were together then, and Cut Corners played bass for them on
that
show. Oh, yeah,
no, I remember that. Man, that seems like yesterday. Shout out Cut Corners. Shout out Keys and Crates.
What's up, guys?
That's amazing. Do you remember each... were you at each one?
Yep.
Do you remember each winner?
Oh, man.
It'd kind of be kind of a smooth shout out. Sorry to put you on the spot, but...
Oh, man. No. I know. Headspin won the one. Okay, let's go... No, I'm not going to be able to do this right now. If you gave me like 10 minutes, I could probably collect it all. I remember Speedy Shoes put his shoes on the table in Victoria and had them going around. That was kind of funny. I think All Good actually won that one. Peter.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool. Shout out All Good.
Yeah. The one here was actually nuts. That's still one of the gnarliest three styles.
That one was dope. And I hosted it.
Yeah.
So I hosted it. And it was some of the people in it were U-Turn. Shout out Oliver. Paul Devereaux. Shout out any Mad Decent song you've ever heard in your life.
Neoteric. Main course.
main course. This is a serious name dropping here, but this is just people that have gone on to just...
Headspin. Some guy that ended up winning the Worlds later on.
The Worlds later. Sekka was in that one. Marvel was in that one.
Yeah. Not Rico. Rico wasn't that year, no.
No.
So I think that... Man, that was...
So Headspin won that one.
Yeah.
And that was just the winner of the region, like of the city.
That was a handshake and high five. And probably a lot of drinks. Yeah.
Okay, so then, so the following year, it all changed.
Boom. So we do 10 cities across Canada. We go from Halifax to Vancouver, and it ladders up into a national final. And we team up with Canadian Music Week in Toronto, and we do the first ever national final with my dude Adam Gill and the Embrace Entertainment guys and Mario J from ADD Fridays in Toronto. Or Mario's hanging out in Ibiza right now if you want to have fun. Shout out Mario J. Yeah, so ADD and Embrace had a Friday night at Circa. And I don't know if anyone remembers that club in Toronto, but Circa was quite a scene. It was like a three-story wild party venue in Toronto. And we did the first ever one. We brought all 10 winners in. We had A-Track and Neil Armstrong headline that night with of course, Bastid.
Who were judges? They were judges.
They were judges. Yeah. We had Jokers of the Scene. They were kind of doing quite a lot at the time on Fool's Gold. Grand Theft was in the building. So, yeah, it was quite a night. You know, 10 DJs performing. DJ Cosmo was the first ever winner. And
from Montreal?
From Montreal, yeah. And now he's DJing for... Oh, shit.
I was going to say Warren G, which is weird.
No, I'll think of it. Anyway. Yeah, so Cosmo came in and smashed the place and did like probably the first ever, you know, real big thing, you know, DMC style with party vibe, kind of really nailed it.
Like he was a clear winner.
Yeah, like smashed it, doing crazy scratches, crazy doubles.
And shout out to...
crazy stage presence.
Shout out to P-Love. From Slow Jam Sundays, he was the Vancouver finalist.
Yeah,
and all the shout out to some of the Vancouver guys like My Gay Husband, I think
he performed. Was in it, yeah,
tons of people.
Cherchez, she was in it.
It was at the Commodore. The Vancouver one was at the Commodore.
That's right.
So,
The regional qualifier was at the Commodore.
That's incredible.
In 2010,
and I think
29.
And I think I hosted that one as well.
Yeah.
And then for me personally, that was when I was on the stage, and it was so crazy. I'm like, I want to enter this next year again.
Yeah, there was it first started having, I guess, Actuality at that time.
Right.
That's when I started yelling at you a lot. If anyone doesn't know, Flipout's on stage, and I'm usually side stage yelling things at him.
Which didn't happen this year for the first time.
Well, once.
Ever.
Once. Oh, Thursday. Man. Shout out Thursday.
Oh, yeah. No, that's Thursday or... Yeah,
Thursday. Okay. Anyway.
Okay, so here we are. We're in the first ever national of the Red Bull 3 style. Cosmo wins. So that's in 2009, I guess, right? So then the next year it goes international. So how did that come about what the fuck happened? That's crazy.
Red Bull's a big company, right? They're kind of all over the world. And lots of like-minded interests in music and so on. So, yeah, the next year 10 countries wanted to do the project in the Red Bull side. And this was like early days. I think I was on Facebook for maybe 18 months at this point. I was kind of a somewhat early adopter to Facebook. But the internet wasn't what it was then, as it is now. So word traveled a little bit differently, and we did a 10-country series of different events all around the world, and those 10 winners ended up in Paris, France, for the first ever final at Élysée Montmartre.
So what were the countries? We had Canada.
Oh, man. You got to brief me on this stuff. So
I feel like it's embedded in your soul.
No, that's 10 years of thousands of events.
Okay, anyway, the best story about this is that you guys did it in one night, which was
10 DJs one night. It was the same as the Canadian final, and there was it took maybe twice to learn the lesson of like, that's too much.
How many hours was that?
It took a long time. So Jazzy Jeff opened.
Wow.
Played a really dope set. It was Élysée Montmartre at the time was kind of a hip hop institution in France and a big club, kind of Commodore style, but older. Which is hard to believe. So Jeff opened. It was really cool, good vibes, and Craze and Clever were there to headline.
Oh, dope.
But between 10 times 15 minutes plus changeovers plus yada, 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 that took better part of 4 hours to do the competition part. Jaffin played 2 hours at the start. Started at 10. It was like 4 a.m. by the time I think those guys went on. And, yeah, it was a really long night. And it's a bit of an assault, a three-style set, too, right?
Like, yeah.
People are smashing records for a long time. So by the time Crazy and Clever got on, it was like, okay, everyone was like, this is too much.
Especially with them.
Yeah.
Crazy and Clever start doing some other shit.
Yeah. So that was, it was super dope. It was fun. And the next morning we had a breakfast at Mama Shelter in Paris and went, okay, well, next year 16 countries want to do this. What? We can't have 16 people play. Like, 10 was crazy.
Right.
And we were kind of just whiteboarding some ideas, and we were going to do the, we knew we were going to do the World Finals in Vancouver in 2011.
And shout out Carve, Alex Notel, who won that year.
We jumped right through that. Yeah.
That's all good. What was his set like? What was his set like?
Like it always is, man. That guy is vibes.
Yeah. Pure vibes.
If you ever get a chance to book somebody and you and you want to take a chance, book that man. Alex Notel, he'll play boogie, he'll play funk, he'll play house, he'll play whatever, and he'll just make it a vibe.
And he play, and he'll probably play all vinyl.
And he'll play mostly all vinyl, and he'll show up with a bag of records the size of a grocery bag and smash your party.
Yeah, and a USB
every
stick
time.
Maybe.
Yeah. USB stick for stuff that's not on vinyl that he wants to play, that he'll launch out of here and there.
So he's the first world champ.
Yeah. So we, next morning, like, whoa, that was fun, but like, really long for that kind of intensity.
Yeah.
And we were kicking around ideas like, how are we going to do 16 countries? And a guy I work with, Sergi, he kind of said, what if we do a week-long thing and we have qualifier nights? And I remember at first being like, this is nuts. There's no way. Like, how are we going to do that? And then maybe the coffee kicked in. And it was it was an early morning meeting after a long night. And I was like, well, Vancouver. I could throw a party for 5 nights in Vancouver, no problem. Shit. I've been doing it forever. So, we just started kind of mapping venue ideas in our mind, and like the World Finals format kind of took shape from
there.
Crazy. Yeah.
And that was,
that was December 2010, the plan to have December 2011 finals.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So, let's take it back to the other Canadian final where Drastic from Thugly won, and he went he went to Paris and he got third.
Yeah.
So that was that year. So the next year Headspin wins the,
well, hang on, the next year was the first year we had the full week format,
right,
in Vancouver.
And so more than 16 countries ended up being a part of it, or was it 16?
It was 16 or 18, I do believe, and then in the end of it. So we had
Shout out DJ Dippy from India.
Oh, yeah. So it was crazy, though. We're here in Vancouver, right? And we're planning this out, and we had a pretty fun night, a fun week of programming. We did a Tuesday to Saturday kind of thing. Actually, we did Monday here at Save-On.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we did a welcome party here at Save-On. That's even crazy.
Wow, history.
Cosmo Baker and Scratch Master played 45s here.
Wow.
Yeah, that's ironic. And
wow, that's some full circle.
Yeah, full circle stuff. But yeah, like right there, playing 45s right there in 2011.
Oh, man.
Anyway, so
dope.
Next night we did the Tuesday night at Bar None.
Yeah,
we had the Rub headline.
Yep.
So we had Cosmo, Ayers, and Joe here, 11. So that was super fun night. Wednesday night we did Venue,
right?
And that was the night Dippy was in it, and also Mario Nieto, what's his DJ name? Oh shit! From Spain, he brought the tractor controllers and was doing
word.
Like guitar shit with it.
Oh yeah,
I can't think of his DJ name. Mario Nieto. I'll come back to it.
Okay.
And then Headspin brought the AP.
Yeah, the MPD.
MPD, the Akai MPD, and kind of flip things that night.
Yeah, that's where he kind of debuted the kind of what would turn into Tone Play.
Kind of what turned into that mixer, really. Like,
kind of, yeah. Yo, like, wow.
S9 kind of.
That's what's up.
Started, I guess, in 2011. But, so that night we had Peanut Butter Wolf headlining, doing a video set, and Bastard headlining, and Bastard brought Sexy Sax Man.
Oh, yeah, that's right. To Fortune. I remember that.
Yeah, we had him play at that on his headline night, too. They had a little stunt. Then Thursday night was at Fortune, and that was Team Canada and Just Blaze headlining.
Yep.
Then Friday night we did
Premiere.
at, what was it called? It was Richards on Richards license.
No, five,
moved to
560.
Yeah, it was Premier and Pete Rock.
Premier and Pete Rock, back to back. Meanwhile, later down the street, Prince played at Bar None to a private crowd.
Yeah, and that was the Prince. That was the after
Prince.
Party. Prince live.
Prince in Vancouver
with Maceo Parker on horns.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
That insane. Was,
yeah, and then Saturday night, we did the Commodore Ballroom as the second ever World Final, and hometown hero Headspin won, and a really tight one with Bazooka from Switzerland.
Yeah. So Headspin, touching on the technology of what the winners like, he, like you said, Headspin basically started freaking pads with the MPD pad, which Kenny just pointed out, basically turned into the S9 mixer. So then the following year, we're going to skip up.
Go super fast through.
So on a personal note, or like a professional / personal note, the Red Bull 3 style was like super, it was like very successful. And you
it was starting to happen, for sure.
Yeah. And you got like a promotion or something? Like you got taken out of your position of it? Or what happened the next year?
No, I guess I'd worked in marketing for a long while and had a second kid. And you do one of those mirror checks in your life where you're like, okay, I worked in marketing for a long time. Marketing is awesome, and I love it, and it's a lot of fun of marketing and events. But you get a bit life check, nerves, whatever. Man, I gotta do a career path thing. What am I gonna do?
Right.
Is marketing a real job? Like, I'm a culture manager. What does that mean if everything goes sideways? So there's a sales job open at Red Bull, and I thought I'd round out my life, I guess, and try sales for a bit. And I did that for the next year and kind of helped the team direct and kind of shape the world finals that happened in Chicago that year. But I was in a different headspace. Right. But I also, it was a life realization thing that this isn't my shit at
all. The sales.
The sales.
So did you even go to the finals?
Were
you
No, I didn't go that year. It was a weird, just didn't go. It was just a different time and headspace and so on. But the guys down in Chicago killed it. I was falling along and almost jumped. But that was the moment I also realized, like, okay, well, I'm doing the wrong thing. And at the same time, Freestyle was going to come back to Canada the next year in 2013 for the World Finals.
Right.
Because we had such success with it in Vancouver, and it was still kind of really burgeoning in some new markets. So Toronto, there was an opportunity to do it in Toronto, and I was over the sales thing, and the project needed some shape. So that was the first year we really had a global view of the project, I guess.
Right. And shout out to Four Color Zach, who won in Chicago.
Oh, man.
And shout out to Shub as well, right? Shub,
yeah.
Shub won Canada.
Drummer from Chile was crazy that year.
Word.
So many people were crazy that year.
So Four Color Zach, he introduced, from the States, he introduced tone play to another level that people still do now. I'm not gonna say try to, they do it. They do it
for sure.
Well, they do it really not well, but everyone really tries to do it. Where his iconic one in my mind is turning Stevie Wonder.
So many fun people on this chat. I'm just seeing.
Oh,
sorry.
Go ahead. I'll just ramble for a minute.
You ramble. I'll say what up.
Four Color Zach's iconic tone play to me was flipping Stevie Wonder's Sir Duke into Rocky theme, or vice versa. I think it was, yeah, Sir Duke, and then again using the MPD pad that Headspin had kind of introduced, quote unquote, introduced the year before, and
hack mapped, I guess.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, because he just chopped up the notes. It was just giving you more cue points than you could have on the computer.
It was the, I think it was still 5 cue points at the time, but way easier to hit.
Right.
They were set up.
You're
set up in a, so you could map it however you want.
They had 16 pads, yeah. But you can only use 5 of them.
Yeah, but still. if you were on NPC,
you'd
put the kick where a kick would be, not on 1 and 2.
Right.
Trying to hit this is like
trying to hit the keyboard.
Yeah, and it looked way cooler too.
It looked super cool. And Headspin actually, they really collaborated. Four Color Zach looked to Heads for a lot of inspiration and like real advice.
Yeah, I remember Zach actually came to the night, the qualifier night where Headspin won on the Wednesday in Vancouver in 2011, and was kind of there with the pom poms, cheering him on.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So that is, we're gonna say that's the third year of the international.
Yeah.
Of Red Bull 3 Style World DJ Championships. So we got Carve, aka Alex Nortel, in France. First winner, Headspin. Second winner in Vancouver. Four Color Zach wins in the U.S. Third winner, and then the next year, the World Finals are in Toronto, and it was a it was crazy. Took over the Thompson Hotel, had like a whole history of Toronto music, which is
Shout out Denise Benson. That was crazy. We spent like a better part of a year. She was doing a book series called Then and Now. Pick up that book. If you love Toronto, pick up the book Then and Now, Denise Benson. It talks about all the venues and people that made Toronto what it is. And Toronto is a very special musical place. So pick up that book. But in that process of book writing, we teamed up with some friends, Matt Hexamer and the guys at Jackknife, and created this infographic of basically the book's research. And it was people and media and venues and things that happened in Toronto on a musical timeline, and we kind of mapped it out by genre, and it was...
And it was, like, put on a wall. Like, it was huge.
It was everywhere. It was our kind of out-of-home campaign for the project.
Right.
Was
it kind of looked, looked like a family tree.
Subway map.
Subway map.
Yeah, it was basically modeled after a subway map, and yeah, Kim Norwich and the team at Jackknife really kind of laid this thing out, and it was infographic sound cute until you add, like, 4,000 lines of data.
Right.
And try to make that not look like visual soup.
So the Chicago, so the World Finals the year before was a week long as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a week long as well in Chicago. And we're there, and in Vancouver, going back to Vancouver when you were there.
Jumping around like.
I know, but I got, because I'm thinking of the, I want to really talk about, also mention the activities during the week. So in Vancouver, you took over Hotel Georgia when it first reopened, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we had that hotel, but yeah, that was okay. Sorry for the timeline jump here, but the Vancouver one, we do a lot of off program too.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of guys from South America that year hadn't seen snow. And we did one of the off program things was we went to Grouse Mountain and went snowboarding.
Crazy.
So Nettu Lopes, Robert Moreno, Bite. Who else was on that one?
Bite, who would later go and be world champ.
I taught them there. How to snowboard.
Yeah.
During the day.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so amazing. Like that this is the shit that happens during the week that that's really are the moments. Like these dudes never seen snow before.
That's
like,
right, yeah.
Here you are, you get the DJ and here's some snow.
And you want to go snowboarding? Cool. Yeah. Let's go to the rental shop, get you some gear.
Oh, amazing.
I was holding their hands and showing them how to literally holding their hands and showing them how to snowboard. But anyway, so we do a lot of this off program stuff, and Toronto was the year we really dug deep on that, I guess.
Because you started doing workshops as well, right?
Yeah.
And that hadn't been done up to that point.
Yeah, so we took over the Thompson Hotel, like you said, and in the basement, every day at 4 o'clock, we kind of had a different workshop or talk. And my man Henry.
Shout out Hizza.
The Hizza. He was the host of this thing. And the first night, or the first day, was we had Jazzy Jeff doing an interview. And Henry went in on this interview. He had the old what was it, the realistic mixer, and then
He brought the Jazzy Jeff mixer in.
He brought that in, and Jeff was telling stories about how that mixer came to be, and you know, spraying WD-40 in the fader to get it to work faster.
Yeah.
And then the engineers of the place being like, no dude, you can't do that. That's why they're breaking.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. And then the next day it was A-Track, and Henry kind of talked about his whole, or they talked together about his whole development, I guess, from 12 to 28 at the time, or whatever he was. And the first day was Denise Benson with Mr. X.
Oh, word.
From Toronto.
Director X.
Basically put Toronto hip-hop radio on the map.
Mr. X. Not Director X.
Mr.
Oh, my
X.
God.
Mr. X, no.
Mr. X.
Brendan from Broken Social Scene was on that panel talking about kind of the indie rock side of things. Oh, buy live video.
Is your phone died?
May have died. Oh, phone death.
There, you're going to use this.
Oh, archive. Phone death. It'll be online later.
So you had these...
save your story and we'll post it.
Yeah, we will. So you had these...
So we had lots of panels and lots of workshops during the day. And then, of course, we had four nights of absolute mayhem in Toronto.
It's crazy. So one of the nights was a friggin' Raptors game. Took the, all the competitors.
Took everybody to the Raptors game, and Jeff, Scratch Bastard, Four Color Zach, and Headspin were the halftime entertainment.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing.
They did a four-man routine. Wow. Shout out Abby Tobias from Soul Power. We'll set that up with the Raptors.
Yep.
It was amazing. Yeah, so four nights in Toronto. First night was like, oh, man, this is really busy. And the second night was at Mod Club, and it was Jeff and Bastard and Heads and Zach kind of headlining that night. And I remember telling people, oh, yeah, okay, cool, get there by 9. All right, send it out text. You got to get there by 8, please, to get in. But it says doors are at 9. I was like, oh, yeah. And we put like 1,400 people in that place, and I think the cap was 900 max. It was so uncomfortable, but so awesome.
Wow.
And SK and Shintaro kind of did their thing that night. And SK won, but Shintaro got in on a wild card.
Crazy.
And the whole week was nuts. And then Friday night, we were at the Danforth Music Hall.
Yep.
With, I'm trying to tell people that we've gone to another channel. Check, flip out.
And there was one, at the Drake, in the bottom of the Drake, right?
First night, that was a kickoff.
Yeah. That was a kickoff with Jazzy Jeff.
Yeah. So, crazy, crazy week. Then World Finals that year were at the Cool House in Toronto.
Which is no longer there. It was like the final night that they were open, wasn't it?
Very close, yeah. But that place was an institution, man. Yeah. It was RPM before that. Shout out Chris Shepherd.
Wow. Chris Shepherd.
Canada's biggest DJ. Gave everybody in this country jobs, let's be honest.
There's some great video interviews, some interviews on YouTube with Chris Shepherd. You see him. He was a gangster. He just did not give a fuck.
Oh, he was breaking records. Like, that's the job of DJs. He was playing his compilations and his radio shit and his MTV or Much Music stuff wasn't really indicative of what he was playing at the club, but he was nuts at the club.
Crazy. So the World Finals, the final night, the finale.
Cool House.
And Shintaro wins.
Shintaro wins on a crazy bill. Who do we have that night? We had like Grand Theft, Keys and Crates, Tribe Called Red.
Yeah.
Autoerotic. I think that, it was a wild night, but funny. I've got a funny story that night. So, Cool House, done a couple gigs there before. Went in, did site checks for like a year. And we're in there, we're loading in, we're building this cantilevered LED wall stage that goes like out over the audience.
Yeah, it was nuts.
And the LED, we ended up doing a deal with somebody and getting a different LED system than the one we had designed.
It was like a 45 degree angle.
Well, it was 45, but then we had to make it like 20 because the LEDs were for outdoors. They had these kind of like shutter systems so you couldn't really see. So we had to change the stage while we were loading in. So sound check gets pushed. And I remember Keys and Crates are sound checking, and they were the first ones to sound check because they're a pain in the ass to sound check because they're a band.
Shout out bands.
I'm trying this live video thing again, but now this isn't going to work very well. It's going to be upside down because the charger.
Oh.
Hang on.
Open that up. This? It's got even. Pretty good.
Almost.
All right, So you're setting up Keys and Crates.
We're setting up Keys and Crates. And I'm in the middle of the dance floor. And Toon gets behind the drum set, and Greg's like setting up turntables. And Toon hits the kick drum, and they just added those rolling V drums to their setup.
Right.
So there's a big 808 kick drum. And he hits the kick drum, and the fucking needle. There's air underneath it when he hits the kick drum.
Wow.
And Greg's on stage, Junior Flo's on stage, and we make eye contact, and I'm like, what the? So you look at the stage, and there's this big LED wall, and this massive sack of subs on either side of the stage.
Right.
And I'm like, what the hell? This doesn't make any sense. And so Toon hits the kick drum again, and the needle jumps again. And I'm like, I don't get it. Why is this so much interference? And who was the PA at the time there? I think it was Rob at Cool House. He's like, well, the subs are under the stage. What do you expect? And we built this crazy, like, plexiglass stage that was underlit. It looked like the Grammys. Wow. I'm like, what do you mean the subs are under the stage? They're right there. He's like, well, no, we got a new sound system like 3 months ago. And we put, these are just the old system. It's not plugged in.
Not plugged in.
Yeah. And I was like, well, yo, no one told us this.
Yo.
We loaded this whole stage in. So it's 5 p.m. Doors are at 7:30.
Wow.
Three of us on our phones, Andrew Hussey, myself, Adam Gill, calling anyone we know in Toronto, like, we need 20 double 18s now.
Oh, because you got to shut those, the subs off, can't use them.
Or move the stage, and the stage ain't moving because it can't leave it out over the dance floor.
Wow.
So there's a crazy traffic jam on the QEW and all kinds of stuff, and at 7 p.m., a truck showed up with a whole new sub rig.
Wow.
We're hand bombing subs in. The doors are at 7:30. People can't really sound check at full volume, so the doors open at 7:30 to sound check. It was this private kind of like VIP thing that we did before, and then the real doors were at 8. 8 p.m., boom, the sound system actually works, and everyone sound checked, and the doors are open.
Wow.
That's a crazy one.
That's crazy. Yeah. And you know what? What's nuts is I had no idea that was happening. I was hosting it, and I was just like there doing whatever. Like, and I'm thinking back, like, was there any indication anything was happening like that? Didn't really look like it. Looked kind of hectic, but like not.
I'm going to touch on that one real quick. It's the same thing as Bastard said it a long time ago, and I don't know, call this advice or whatever. Key to DJing is when you make mistakes, no one knows.
Yeah.
Same with production.
Yep.
And the inside, it's every time there's a disaster.
Yeah.
We could. I said our whole treatment for the video should be all the outtakes.
Yeah.
Just all the bloopers, because life is hard on the road. But yeah, and those things happen, and you keep them under your hat until a funny time like this comes to tell a story.
Oh man, that's insane. Yeah. A whole new sound system and opened in time, and
the crazy night.
The competitors didn't know any.
No, just soundcheck was delayed. Like soundcheck without bass. It was kind of weird.
Crazy.
But yeah, in the end, that was crazy night. Shintaro smashed.
Yeah.
Really, I guess, paid attention to Toronto and played crazy set that really resonated with the Toronto crowd.
Yeah.
After the first night, the set was dope, but the second set was like, whoa.
Yeah. And he's still killing it out there, and he's got that funk too.
Yeah, he's always had it. I'd say now he's just a supreme selector too now.
Yeah.
He's really in it musically. He's doing a lot of studies and a lot of production work and making his own beats and doing a lot of just really forward thinking tunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out Shintaro.
So that's 2013.
That's Toronto. So now the world finals go.
Oh, we got to touch about one thing in Toronto. That was the year we really started the 45s after party.
Right. Oh yeah. At the Drake at the top there.
Yeah.
It was also the opening night was also 45s.
Yeah. It was kind of everything.
Upstairs
and 45 down. Jeff did like a break set on.
It was crazy. That was the first time that Bastard came upstairs and was like, "Flip, can you go downstairs and do the mic work for Jeff?" I'm like, "Jeff, Jazzy Jeff? yeah. Can you just get on the mic a little bit?" I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I remember going downstairs before I was formally introduced to Jeff. And I grabbed the mic and I just kind of stood at the back of the stage and like really waited. Should I talk now? Is he going to fucking turn around and be like, who is this guy talking on the mic? I was like trying to whatever, but man, turns out now I just bomb his stage anytime and rap brand new funk, much to his chagrin.
Yeah. So yeah, that was crazy though. Cause
it was nuts.
Maceo from De La.
Mace was there.
Everyone was playing records and it was crazy, but I just want to touch on this.
Shortcut.
Yeah, the 45s thing has become such a big part of what we do as a world finals on the night after. So that we're upstairs, and Maceo's playing kind of in the corner. We're having brunch. Everyone's wearing sweatpants. It's nuts. Like everyone, Shortcut's playing all kinds of dub plates on 45.
It's crazy.
Like it's nuts. And then Maceo plays the original,
not just knee deep.
Not just knee deep.
Funkadelic.
The one he sampled to make Me, Myself, and I with the handwritten notes on the record.
That was dope.
And stops it like, hey, come here for a second. Check this out. This is what we made Me, Myself, and I with. Oh, yeah, no, we all know that. No, this record is what we made Me, Myself, and I with. What the? So, yeah, that really started the kind of what we do at the World Finals is the day after. Since then, we've done an all 45s Scratch Bastard Barbecue. And we'll kind of touch on those as we go, I guess, through the history of the next bunch of years.
Yeah. And yeah, it was really exciting because you got at me and you're like, yo, I got an idea. Why don't you open with some 45s? I'm like, really? And like, it was really important for you to have to introduce just every like just make sure everything is represented in the in the contest, because in the competition, because you got the technology going friggin' space age.
Yeah.
And but still, you know, people play records, DJing's.
Yeah, and there's
DJs
there's,
do all types of different.
There's a
things.
Different cadence in your mind when you're playing 45s than there is when you're playing on a computer.
That's for sure.
You're a better DJ on your 45s than you are on a computer.
Oh man, I don't know about that. Are you talking about me personally? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm talking about you.
Sometimes,
no, but no, but it's creative constraints are sometimes a blessing.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and that also sets a vibe for the event, because, like I said, at the Paris one, when you had whatever it was 8 hours of high-end digital vinyl solutions being hammered to their nth, it got a bit much.
Digital vinyl solutions.
The textural audio of records to start the night is always nice, and the week.
Yeah. So that happened at the Drake Hotel, top floor. That was amazing. We went and we ended up. Cosmo and Scratch Bastard ended up playing,
and Maceo
and Mace.
Yeah,
Mace tapped out after a while, I think.
Well, we were there for 11 hours.
Yeah, we were there for, that's the point, we were there for 11 hours, and it was pretty amazing. I mean, we're just playing records and stuff like Nelly and NSYNC Girlfriend dropped, and everyone went nuts, like a room full of like music aficionados. And you hear a Neptune's beat, and you just go friggin' wild. So that's kind of amazing. The ending party, the Bastards Barbecue, that wasn't a barbecue yet.
No, that was the pre-barbecue barbecue.
Yeah.
So that was it, the barbecue that lit the barbecue, if you will.
Hey.
So yeah, next year,
I don't know how this happened, but Kenny's like, yo, we're going to Azerbaijan. I don't know where that is. No one really knew where it was. That's no disrespect to Azerbaijan, but like.
No, again, this is 2013. Internet, again, wasn't what it is today.
That's just... The whole Baku story is its own story in itself. The way that you went there and did site checks and...
I got a lot of Azerbaijan visas in my passport. I think I've had 4 passports since because I filled them up. But yeah, Azerbaijan was a whole other trip. It was a bit of a... Okay, this project can work anywhere. And the guys from Azerbaijan at Red Bull, Michael Mixo, he was like, yo, we should do it here because this place is starting to change. They're kind of like a new Dubai. They have visions to do things differently.
Yeah.
The money was off the charts at the time. So people were this affluence and this newfound acceptability of going out and doing these things was just starting to hit. And
selfie sticks were really big.
Woo!
Oh, man.
A lot of selfies. Chelfie sticks. C-E-L. With the little accent.
There's nothing like seeing a venue packed with like multiple dudes.
With Chelfie sticks.
With selfie sticks, yeah. And dancing in circles.
Yeah, so the first time I went there, I went and I was like, yo, this is kind of like Footloose. It really was. There's no venues. Like, DJing wasn't really a thing. There was Twist and Tim doing a thing at this this kind of rooftop-y thing, but there weren't really clubs. There was one club called Sketch Club, I think, and it was pretty dope. But there wasn't a whole lot happening DJ-wise there, or crowd-wise. So we ended up ending your video?
Yeah, because it's going to end.
Anyway. Oh, you have to switch?
Yeah.
Instagram. So we ended up going to Baku, and... Yeah, that was a whole other thing.
Yeah, that was crazy. From my perspective, I was invited to host again. It was like we were in a complex. It was like a...
Oh, hang on. So we were looking for a hotel there because the hotel thing, takeovers, really work, and that's kind of our home base for the week. And this hotel was being renovated out on the Caspian Sea about 10 kilometers outside the city. And I think it was my third or fourth trip there looking for hotels. And they got 7-star hotels in Baku, which is dope, but not for us. I don't want to take myself to a 7-star hotel, let alone 100 people, that knowing the antics we'd get up to. So there was some hotels that were just too nice for us. And this one hotel out on the sea had been renovated. It was being renovated, this Ramada. So we go out for a site visit, and the guy speaks Azeri. And Russian. I don't speak either. And I'm with the team. And we walk in, and he basically says, okay, well, this is the lobby, and it's being renovated, and there's construction stuff everywhere. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. But it's a horseshoe-shaped building with a pool in the center, and it's facing the sea. That much I know. Everything else is being renovated. It looks like a bomb site. And I'm like, oh yeah, cool. And then he points to the end of the hallway and he's like, oh, this is the bar. Yep. Okay, cool. It's open 24 hours. That's good. I was like, okay, cool. Can we have beers by the pool 24 hours? But of course. And it's kind of staggered English and yeah. back and forth translation. Well, is the restaurant open 24 hours? But of course. So we can have beer and food by the pool any time of the day and night. But of course. Can we put a sound system out there? It's like, no one here. Do whatever you want. Because it's the middle of nowhere. It's like 10 kilometers outside the city. So I basically said, sign the contract without seeing a room. It's like, yo, this is, you can't do this anywhere else in the world.
No.
And so, yeah, we signed the contract and hoped the renovation would be finished. And
sure enough, showed up and it was gold. Everything was gold.
Nothing happens faster in the world than in Azerbaijan. They built an Olympic infrastructure in 1 year to host the European Games in the year that we were there.
Wow.
Like, Olympic pools, Olympic soccer stadiums, everything. It was crazy.
Insane.
So that place was just like churning out innovation and change.